Welcome to the Can Be Now podcast.
We are the best and easiest way to stay connected to what's happening in your hometown. I'm Tyler Frankie.
And I'm Tyler Clausen. In today's episode, we talk with Teresa Sassy about her fantastic chocolate-covered concoctions created close by in Canby. Whoa, what a rich flavored tongue twister.
And later, we'll be catching up with Don Deppner, one of the organizers of Operation Snuggle. It may sound like a marketing campaign to sell more fabric softener, but don't be fooled. It's actually a really cool grassroots outreach to homeless families in the Canby School District that takes place one day each year. Don will tell us all about it. But first, the news.
The City Council has approved some additional language for managing the city's truck traffic that they hope will forestall a showdown between some local residents and the users of the Pioneer Industrial Park. Though the language governs all roads and truck routes in the city, the primary bone of contention is Southeast 3rd Avenue between Ivy and Sequoia Parkway. Though it's not a truck route, it is routinely used by trucks leading Tofty Farms and other residents on 13th to ask that the ordinance be enforced. This prompted a response from the industrial community, who claimed the city had made agreements with them when the industrial park was being laid out, to the effect that their trucks would be allowed on 13th. Yeah, it's kind of confusing. As a compromise, City Administrator Rick Robinson proposed additional language and definitions that would allow the city to grant local trucks, I'm using air quotes, which you can't see, commercial trucks that begin and end their trips in Canby, exceptions on certain roads if they chose. In effect, this would allow the city to give Canby businesses a break while enforcing the existing routes on trucks that are just passing through.
I believe this is the solution that's on the table is the best solution available. Okay. Short of commissioning a transportation or a study, and with the intent to reopen the discussion about appropriate truck routes through the city of Canby. And honestly, I don't think either the residents or the industrial users and property owners were terribly excited about the idea of having to go through that entire process. Mm-hmm.
Councilors agreed that the compromise was an improvement over the previous proposal, but some, like Councilor Sarah Spoon, said a deeper discussion about the city's transportation plan and truck routes is still needed.
If Southeast 13th doesn't make sense as a truck route, I'm really, really conflicted about why Southwest 13th does. There's a lot of confusion and ambiguity there for me, and I would really love to have some further conversation about that at some point so I can either better understand it. Because if trucks aren't supposed to use Southeast 13th, I don't understand how they get to Southwest 13th. So I just have a little bit of confusion, and I feel like some of the same principles about why one road wouldn't be a truck route apply to the other section.
The new ordinance was approved on first reading by a vote of 5-0. If it passes second reading in January, it will allow the city to begin posting signs such as "No trucks, local delivery only," or "Local trucks only" on those restricted streets. Oh, were you going to look up this news story? No. Please, allow me to tell it to you. Seriously, I insist. So here's the news. Oregon ranks third on the entire nation for volunteering. According to the 2018 Volunteering in America report, over 40% of our population, some 1.4 million people, volunteered in the previous year, contributing more than 177 million hours. Tennessee, nicknamed Volunteer State, those are also in air quotes, came in 31st. Volunteering raises everyone's spirits, and there is a volunteer opportunity to fit any schedule, says Wendy Hayes, Community County Social Services Volunteer Coordinator. Just a couple hours a month can make a huge difference for someone who needs a ride to the doctor, help paying bills, or is in need of food. The gift of volunteering can save a life and is life-changing, heartwarming for all involved. This past year, Clackamas County has connected hundreds of volunteers with opportunities to provide support for individuals in need through a variety of programs. County programs currently in need of volunteers include warming centers, the point-in-time homeless court, the money management program, and the transportation reaching people program. For other volunteer options in Cambie, check out the Cambie Center's website and volunteermatch.org. In what not so long ago was an empty field in the northeast corner of Clackamas County, you will find something remarkable. A new community of military veterans who were once experiencing homelessness, but are now on the road to stability and self-sufficiency. The county calls it the Veterans Village. It's a transitional shelter community for homeless veterans where they receive decent, safe, and sanitary housing, as well as access to many other needed services. It opened only 2 months ago, but county staff reported this week that it is already showing tremendous signs of success. Two individuals who entered the village have already transitioned into permanent housing. Two other individuals have secured employment since becoming residents, and three more are pursuing employment with local fire department. One resident is now attending classes at Clackamas Community College. Two others have primary care physicians and regular medical visits after being on emergency care when they entered the community. The village has also potentially saved lives. Since moving in, three residents experienced extremely serious and urgent health problems, necessitating emergency services to rush to the scene. If these veterans had been on the street, it's likely that they would have died. Commissioner Martha Schrader said she hopes for more employment opportunities to emerge for residents from the Veterans Village, which she does believe will happen as the project moves forward and local employers see the positive impacts.
Yeah, because it is coming the long way we intuitively thought it was going to come along. It gets people stable, and bingo, and then the businesses feel really good. Like, you know, we didn't create a tent village, which is right. What they're all afraid of, with the culture that goes along with that. This is a structured community with meals and camaraderie, and it's not what we see with the poor people along the side of the road in a tent.
For more information about the Veterans Village, visit clackamas.us/transitional-housing. Cambie's professional bull rider Chase Doherty made some noise Tuesday night after three straight no scores had nearly dropped him out of the top eight in the National Finals Rodeo Championship taking place this week in Las Vegas. But with the sixth go-round, Chase earned his third check of the NFR, finishing second with a score of 88.5. The ride netted him $20,731 and pushed him back up to sixth in the world standings with total earnings of $172,375 in the season. It's still a very tight race with less than $2,500 separating Chase from the cowboy currently in third, Jeff Askey. With 10 rounds total, there's still plenty of rodeo left before this year's NFR wraps up this weekend. Go get him, Chase.
Hi, Ray Keene here from the Cambie Center. You are not alone. If you're having thoughts about ending your life, reach out to someone. Call 1-800-273-TALK. That's 1-800-273-8255. Or call a local church such as Cambie Christian Church at 503-266-4018. Cambie Foursquare Church, 503-266-4444. Or Zora Lutheran Church, 503-266-4061. You know, people around you care even when you may not see it. You are not alone. Brought to you by the Cambie Suicide Prevention Task Force.
Teresa, so how annoying was I trying to get this interview to talk to you?
How annoying were you?
Was I the most annoying person you've ever met?
Yeah, you were. You were very, very persistent, which which really works for me.
Okay, good,
good. Because I knew you were on a mission.
Yes, I was.
So I
was.
I wanted to make sure that I took care of you.
Yeah. Well, you know the thing.
You were the real deal.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, you had to make sure we were legit, right?
Yeah. I did.
So the thing was, I was really excited about this because I've seen the movie Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, and I have to say, being here, I'm a little disappointed. There's no chocolate waterfall, hardly any Oompa Loompas that I can see. So what's the deal?
We have outfits for those.
You do?
Yeah.
The Oompa Loompa outfits.
Yes, we do.
Do you have the wigs?
Uh-huh.
Oh, okay, great. Okay, well, I guess I'm not as disappointed. No, but I have a lot of respect for what you do and how you've built your business, and I was just interested in hearing more of your story. So can you tell me how you became a chocolate maker? Tell me a story.
I have a corporate friend of mine, about probably 2002. She lived and worked out of Seattle at a specialty cheese and chocolate company. And she was after me for a long time to come to a chocolate class because I wasn't eating chocolate. I hadn't eaten chocolate in for 10 years.
Oh, no way. Really?
Serious.
Yeah.
And I love chocolate, actually.
Yeah. Just never found any? Couldn't find any good chocolate?
I found a lot of good chocolate, but it was kind of like being a chocoholic.
So I took a break.
I think I'll just take a break for a while.
Okay. I hear you.
So I finally went to a chocolate class, and she gave me a box of chocolate from Cuba. Because way back then, we could get it, and it was so fabulous. And I thought, well, I'll just have a little taste.
Yeah.
So she sent the box back with me, and I put it away. And for 2 weeks, it was kind of gnawing at me to get into it.
Yeah.
So I got into it, and that's the history of it.
The rest is history.
That was it. Yep. Yeah. So she
you were hooked, huh?
Started teaching me some good stuff, and... Yeah.
So it was the quality of the chocolate, not the process of chocolate making. You wanted to make something like that.
Yes.
Yeah,
it was just because you take different chocolates, and I take different chocolates, and I make my own blend. So it kind of sets us apart. Some people just do one chocolate from maybe one country.
Yeah.
And I use European chocolates, a little bit of Spain, and just chocolates, basically, and I it's a flavor profile.
Yeah. Can you tell me more about the process of how you find the chocolate that you want to use? Do you get samples from certain countries?
We get samples from different reps that come in. Venezuela, it would be Valrhona is a wonderful chocolate. Colombia has a good chocolate. Switzerland does great. Belgium does great. And they might get the same exact beans that another from another country or the exact same country, but it's the way they process them that sets them apart. And I really, really like Belgium. I like Switzerland. I like France. I mean, it just depends. So I taste, they come in and, you know, I taste it, different percentages. And then I just find my blend.
That's really fascinating. So how does it come in? Does it come in like big blocks and then you melt it down to work with it?
It comes in calais. They're called calais. It's not, we don't call it a chocolate chip. A chocolate chip is small, so a calais would be larger than a chocolate chip and flatter.
I like that word, calais.
Calais.
Okay, sounds French. Uh-huh. Sounds delicious.
So sometimes you can get them in the block form. Mm-hmm. It depends on what you want to do.
Yeah, it comes in like big bags or something, the calais?
Yeah, like a 50-pound block.
Yeah.
That's a lot to deal with.
Yeah, that's a lot of chocolate.
That's a lot of chopping.
Oh, a lot of chopping.
A lot of chopping. Good exercise.
Yeah.
But
good arm workout.
Really work for most of what I do. So, but yeah, it's great. Sky's the limit. It's fun. You can create anything you want. I mean, it's just awesome.
Well, that is what is so phenomenal about what you guys do is there's so much creativity. That's why I love following you on Instagram. There's always something new. Like, a lot of people kind of find what sells or whatnot and stick with it. And you guys are doing something different every day. Is it just because it's so much fun or what?
It's a lot of fun. And I tend to, when I relax at night, I start thinking of different things to create.
Yeah.
So yesterday, I made hot buttered rum truffles, just the season, and they are so wonderful. And we just slip in what we can, but right now we're working on large orders and gift baskets for the holidays. So every once in a while, when I have a lot on my mind, I'll slip in something crazy like that to do, because I just need to veer off for a little bit and kind of have fun. Yeah. Yeah. And so that's a new one right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Any other new fun stuff you're working on for the holidays?
Just the Santas, the St. Nicholas. We have snowmen. The peppermint bark is huge.
Yeah.
That's just huge right now.
Yeah.
And just lots of gift baskets.
Yeah.
So the other reason I want to talk to you, my wife, whom you've met, is obsessed with your truffles. She loves your chocolate. She says they're the best she's ever had.
Oh, great.
And obviously, without giving away any of your secrets, wanted to see if you could talk a little bit about what you think that quality comes from. What is it that people are obviously seeing and tasting in your products?
Well, I think it's one thing. It's our choice of chocolates. That I'm real funny about where it's coming from, fair trade, and the flavor profile. It's got to be good. Yeah. And then we use local ingredients whenever possible. All the hazelnuts all come from just Hubbard, Aurora, this area.
You don't get your hazelnuts from Belgium as well? That's just your chocolate?
No. Okay. No, not from Turkey, but we get them from right here in the Northwest.
That's great.
So, yes, it is. So we support local as much as possible. It's just, I think, the mix of what we do, the fruits, the everything, it comes from here.
So I imagine not only is that just a good idea, it obviously helps the environment, helps local economy, but probably helps the quality as far as the freshness.
It does. And we are all about supporting our neighbor business, our small business, any way we can.
Yeah.
Yes. And donating back to the community whenever possible. But we're a small business, so we have to be really careful.
For sure. Yeah, the Oompa Loompas can only help so much.
That's right. That's exactly right.
I saw something on your website that a little bit of your Amish heritage plays into your techniques and what you do.
I have a lot of Amish relatives in Pennsylvania and Kansas, and there's some in Montana and Ohio. They're all over the place. But I've taken several trips, and we talk often about, we share recipes, and their way of life is real simple. And I respect that, and I just they're very humble people, hardworking, humble people.
Yeah, they are.
And so I just think it's part of who I am, my heritage, and so it's really special to have a connection with them.
Yeah. Do they make chocolate?
No, they do not make chocolate. There was a gal in the area in Pennsylvania where my relatives live that she would go through 3 tons of chocolate a year and no electricity.
Oh,
so figure that out. I mean, it was phenomenal. And they've been here and they've stayed with us.
Yeah.
And she has given me actually a couple ideas.
That's nuts.
And one of them turned
out
to be
huge. They have Oompa Loompas. There's no way.
It's just amazing. Yes, they do. So anyway. Yeah,
That's really cool. But the recipes you share then is more like baked goods maybe? Or
baked goods.
Yeah.
Baked goods, yes. And then she shared some chocolate stuff with me. Yeah. Too, but yeah, it's more recipes, and we the confections is what we draw on from them.
Mm-hmm. Is your main source of business from website orders and things like that, or walk-ins, or what?
Walk-ins and wholesale would be the largest.
Yeah.
The website, it kind of creeps along a little bit. We're working on that more and more as time allows, but basically it's word of mouth, it's walk-in, it's wholesale.
You have a beautiful location here on Ivy Street. Fairly new, right? You just moved in last year?
We've been here. We were here. We opened a year ago in September.
Okay.
So, it's been, 15 months now?
Yeah,
we love it here.
Yeah.
We miss downtown.
Yeah.
We really do. We miss a lot of the customers and stuff, but this is so much
better. The foot traffic, obviously.
Yeah.
There's no sidewalk.
Exactly. But this is so much better for us and so much more efficient.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you are starting to see sort of an increase, especially maybe around the holidays, and walk-ins and people coming in and finding you?
Yes, more and more every day.
Okay.
Oh, they'll come in and they'll go, oh, we finally found you. We didn't know you left. And that's typical.
Yeah, they thought you were just gone out in the winds.
Typical.
Yeah. Cool. So what is your address so people can come find you if they're hearing this and want to check it out?
It's 1438 South Ivy Street in Canby, and we're right across from Hope Village, and there's a big pink chocolate sign right out front.
So look for the chocolate sign. What are your hours?
Right now, we're Monday through Friday, 9 to 6, and Saturday and Sunday. We're open Sundays through the holidays, the month of December. We're open 9 to 4 on Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah. Well,
So my last question, are you ever looking for any taste testers? Or if you like have chocolate you ruin and you're just going to throw away, you know, you need anybody to help you out with that? Because I might know
are
a guy.
You talking about that? We'll just take you to the seconds bucket.
Okay.
But we do have some samples available this time of year for people.
If you ever need a staff taste tester, I might know a guy. So.
Okay.
Thank you, Teresa.
You're welcome. Very much.
Welcome to the Canby Area Chamber of Commerce Business Spotlight, where we showcase businesses that strengthen and add value to our local community.
Okay, can you tell me your name and your business?
I'm Diane Harbeck. I'm a broker with Better Homes and Gardens Realty Partners in Canby.
Cool. And Diane, you describe yourself as a full-service realtor. What does that mean?
I will be with my clients before, during, and after when they're looking for a home. I will help them every bit of the way, finding a home, putting in the offer. During, if they need to move, I will help them find boxes. I will help them move. And then after, if you need anything afterwards, if anything with the utilities, anything they need, I am there to help them.
You will actually help people move.
I have helped people move. I have found boxes and delivered boxes so they can move.
Yeah.
I have, helped them clean up their house afterwards, whatever they need help with doing.
So full service realtor means you're a realtor plus that guy who owns a truck.
I am. And I know people who own trucks too, so we can use multiple trucks.
There we go. Where can people find you, Diane?
We are right at the corner of 99 and Elm with the big house-looking building. It's Better Homes and Gardens Realty Partners. Or you can just reach me by phone.
Cool. Thanks, Diane.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, so can you tell me who you are and what we're doing here?
My name is Dawn Deppner, and we are here at Operation Snuggle making blankets for homeless kids.
Yeah. And how long has this been going on?
This is our 10th year.
That's awesome.
Started in 2008.
Yeah, that's amazing. So Operation Snuggle, my daughter, who is also here with me, you guys may hear her if she can't stay behaved, but she calls it, she's been really excited about it. She's been calling it the Snuggle Party. So
yeah, it is a Snuggle Party. It's great that you bring your kids. It's a family event. And it's
You guys actually encouraged me because I wasn't sure if they were the right ages because it said, like, any kid who's old enough to use scissors, which they really aren't.
But they look like they're having fun.
Yeah, well, they are. They're enjoying it. And there is a lot of people here. Oh, my gosh.
You know, typically we have 200 or 300 people here. And every year I wake up very worried that we're not going to have enough folks show up. But we always do.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So you think you have about 300 here today, or?
By the looks of it, there's another gymnasium.
Right. I know. Yes. It's more than one gym.
Yes.
That's crazy.
So yeah. I would say we probably have anywhere, I would say at least 250 here.
Yeah.
And there's so much going on in Canby today.
Oh my
with
gosh.
With Shop with the Cop. The fire department is doing Breakfast with Sienna. So there's people
Kiwanis
coming.
Kiwanis Toy Drive.
Yes.
Yes.
So it's a lot of people coming and going.
Yeah. That's my son. You okay, buddy? He's having trouble getting his coat off, so big emergency here. How many homeless kids are in the district?
Right now there's 188 homeless kids in Canby, and we are helping 35 homeless kids in Malolo School District as well. Mm-hmm.
So what is it with the blankets? Like, why do you focus on that as a, I mean, obviously you do more, but for this event with the blankets to provide that for them?
So we started Operation Snuggle because in the coursework of my job, I was at a school district, and one of the educators had to keep stepping away. This was Reynolds High School, and she told me that she was helping a homeless student and told me that she had 105 homeless students in Reynolds High School. So thought about it on my way home and talked about it with my daughter, and we decided that we wanted to do something to help homeless kids, not just in Reynolds, but Canby.
Yeah.
Because we were just really taken aback about how many homeless kids there really are. And we just really felt like we need to educate the community about these homeless kids. And the reason for the blanket is in my mind, I imagined these kids not being warm at night. And this is a really good way that the community can come together. It doesn't cost anything to come sit down and tie knots and get these to the homeless kids.
And it's obviously, I think, to a lot of people and to the people who receive it, it's more than a blanket. You know, a blanket represents so much. It represents that warmth and that security that we hope also comes. You know, it's not just a blanket, but...
Yeah, absolutely. I really feel like every kid needs to know that they're loved, and when they wrap that blanket around them, they know that their community is loving them.
Dawn, do you find, you're talking about educating the community, do you feel that there's kind of a sense that, like, people think that if a kid is plugged into the school district or something, that that's sort of like they have their needs met? Like, there's just not that disconnect that that only takes care of them for a certain part of the day, you know, and then there's the other two-thirds of the day where they may need support or may not have everything that they need.
Yes, absolutely. I think it's important to note that what defines homelessness in our districts is it could be multiple families living together. It could be migrant workers. It could be truly homeless and living outdoors. It's a home that you can't call your own. So that would include foster children as well.
Yeah.
They would qualify.
There's this whole spectrum of inadequate housing where they may have a roof over their heads, but they don't have their own home or that security or stability that it brings.
Yes, their own home, their own bed. They're living, you know, unfortunately, in areas that are housing multiple families, and they just don't have the comforts that we take for granted every day.
What do you think it's like for the hundreds of people that volunteer at this event? Obviously, they're here to help the kids that this thing is serving, but I feel like, you know, and I'm getting something just from being here, but you get more than that, don't you think? What do you hear from people?
I think it's just very heartwarming to see a community come together. I believe that it takes a village to raise a child. I've always believed that. And to see everybody come together for the kids that live in our community and outreach to other communities, it's very heartwarming. Like, there's just a real sense of warmth and community. And I wish that we saw this every day, but it's very nice to see it.
Yeah, at least once a year, right? And throughout the year at different times. Well, thank you so much, Dawn, for talking to me. Thank you for putting this on and all the work that you do for our community and the needy kids that are here in the district. So anything else you want to add?
No, thanks for coming.
Thank you.
And that's our show. Special thanks to our guest today, Teresa Sassy. Hey, if you like what you just heard, please let us know. Write a review for us on Facebook, iTunes, or your favorite podcasting app. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss our latest episodes.
We've got a special treat for you on Monday. It's Tony Starlight. The multi-talented entertainer's Portland Variety Show is a Christmas tradition for many Canby residents, but this year we're bringing him to you right here on the Canby Now podcast. Don't miss it.
If you have a news tip, an idea for a guest we should invite on the program, or suggestions for how we can improve, please contact us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CanBeNow, or on our website, CanBeNowPod.com.